Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we've still got the White House that won't say when Trump last tested negative for COVID-19, which calls into a lot of questions of timelines, and I got a ton of questions. Famed journalist Carl Bernstein's claiming that the White House is in the midst of a cover-up, covering up Donald Trump's mental and physical condition, and the doctors are part of it. He even claims that there's some Republicans who are furious and frustrated over it, which I got to tell you, I don't buy. But the reality is the Trump campaign train, they're calling all aboard and doing virtually nothing. Absolutely nothing to make those rallies not super spreader events. So going to be an interesting fall in Western Pennsylvania. The COVID-19 super spreader event, I guess, is coming your way tomorrow, as Trump has announced that he'll be in Western Pennsylvania tomorrow. I got to tell you, I'd hate to be a healthcare worker this fall. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on where we are, how we've got here, and maybe what we can do to get out of it, I've asked Kenneth McCallum to come talk with us. He's an author and attorney. He's written the book COVID-19, The Virus That Changed America and the World. Kenneth, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So we're in this really weird moment where now that the president has, thank God for him getting sick. I can't make that up. He's thanked God for him getting sick. We now don't have to worry about it. It's a thing of the past.
Well, it's really the wrong message. He's obviously been hit with steroids and a lot of other experimental drugs, and even his own doctors, who haven't been completely candid, says he's not entirely out of the woods. But what really surprises me is that he's obviously concerned about himself, and we're all concerned about him and Melania, but there's tens of thousands, millions of other Americans out there who have contracted coronavirus, didn't have the same protections or the therapies or the treatment that he has available. And I think we lost a teaching moment when the president could have said, look, if I can get it, anybody can get it. Wear your mask, socially distance, let's be careful about this.
Right, so he went just the opposite way. I got it, it's not a big deal. We're going to power right through it, which, you know, as I've been saying now, I'd hate to be a healthcare worker this fall, because we can expect the number of cases to go up, we can expect more sick people, possibly more people to die, and a healthcare system, which has always been the big concern, that's going to be overworked, because our healthcare system isn't capable of taking on the kind of numbers that, you know, some people are projecting we're going to see this fall.
Well, I think that's true, and in my book, I really address that. The U.S., although there are some good things about our healthcare system, it just does not have much reserve capacity because there's so many for-profit hospitals and medical facilities. They don't store equipment that's not profitable just to store it for a pandemic, and it's not profitable to create vaccines in advance if it doesn't turn into a pandemic. Only public health systems can do that. And there's some good aspects to our healthcare system. That lack of resilience, that lack of reserve capacity has to be addressed, because we're addressing this pandemic and we have to be prepared really for additional pandemics to come. And we need to learn from this experience.
No, absolutely. And, you know, the thing you hit on, which is one of my big concerns, is over the last several years, we've really gone into hyper-privatization mode and consolidation, where your local hospitals are now being gobbled up by these giant players, and they're condensing resources. So there isn't as much capacity as there was probably 10 years ago. And it's only going to get worse. Whereas when I was a kid, every community had their community hospital, and it wasn't done for profit. It was there because you might need it. That's not the thinking anymore. It's now, hey, how can we cash in?
As I trace in my book, and it really surprised me the extent of it as I researched it, so much of the healthcare industry is now controlled and owned by the hedge funds, which is concerned obviously only about one thing, their bottom line. So they've been cutting corners. They've been cutting costs. They've been maximizing profits. And perhaps most dangerously, they've been over-leveraging. They've been borrowing money like it was water because money is so cheap right now. So why not cash out and mortgage the farm up to the hilt? So a lot of them will be facing bankruptcy and reorganization.
That's an excellent point, because here's the weird thing is, you know, it came out in the debate yesterday, and we've been talking about it for a while. You've got the Trump administration in front of the Supreme Court right now trying to undo the ACA. So once the dreaded Obamacare is no longer the law of the land, we're going to go back to having, you know, 30 to 50 million people uninsured at a time when we're going to probably have a lot more people being sick and having to go to the hospital, and hospitals having to eat the cost of uncompensated care, which is going to exacerbate all the problems you just laid out.
No, absolutely. The problem with covering people with pre-existing conditions was there before the ACA, Obamacare attempted to address it. But now you have an additional layer of pre-existing condition. It's called COVID-19. And also not only COVID-19, but all the array of secondary illnesses and problems that doctors and hospitals are now finding can be connected with coronavirus. It's, even after the infectious period has gone, we're finding that significant numbers of patients are having long-term impacts, neurological, cardiac, and otherwise, which are going to be pre-existing conditions. And obviously, if they don't have coverage, the country is going to be even in worse shape than it is now.
It's insane. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Kenneth McKellen. He's an author and attorney. His book, COVID-19, The Virus That Changed America and the World. You can get that at all places where they sell books. We'll get links out on how you can do that. Now, you talk about in the book that, you know, how and why we as a country have done better in the past than we did this time. I've got my reasons why I think this exploded the way it did. But, you know, tell me, share with us some of your thoughts.
Sure. At the beginning of the Trump administration, there was a playbook in place and an early warning system relating to pandemics. And that was an outgrowth of the SARS crisis, 2003. The swine flu in 2009, and certainly the Ebola crisis. So we had had some scares before, and fortunately it did not overwhelm the country as the recent pandemic has. But there were systems put in place going back as far as the George W. Bush administration, passed on to Obama. That playbook, unfortunately, was set aside by the Trump administration, and they started defunding the early warning system systems around the world, which we were funding, which were testing for viruses, they were exploring for viruses, and were out there as part of this early warning system. And also my book goes way back to, 1918 and other pandemics in the past in the U.S. And we've been kind of spoiled over the last 100 years. We haven't had a real major pandemic. But if you look at the photographs and what the cities did back in 1918, they're using the same weapons that we have available now, only some of the cities were much more effective. They instituted the social distancing and the use of masks with the very first indication of cases that hit them, and were able to keep it down and significantly in a number of cities. And I compare that to even New York, a blue state. You think they'd do a better job, but Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo were pretty lackadaisical about it, encouraging people before the shutdown to go out to dinner, go out to your bars one last time. It's no big deal. The St. Patrick's Day parade every March 17th, advisors to Mayor de Blasio had to go and basically beg him on their knees to cancel that particular parade. And fortunately, they were successful. So we really didn't learn from the lessons of 1918, and they were more vigilant because they had a series of typhoid and typhus and other pandemics before that. So history is repeating itself, and I can't believe that it's still a political issue, a political weapon being debated, the use of masks, social distancing, and those are the only devices we have. We don't have a vaccine at this point.
Yeah, well, if you listen to President Trump, we've got it. He took it. It makes him feel 20 years younger, and he claims everyone's going to get it, and everyone's going to get it for free.
Yeah, well, they're probably going to get the infection for free, but I mean, it's pretty scary. The steroids that he's on, if anybody is familiar with somebody who's taken these anti-infection steroids, it can make you feel like a Superman for at least a few days before you might start crashing. I hope he doesn't crash, but clearly there's some alteration in his thinking patterns and expression. He's even tweeting more in the middle of the night than he was before. So he's definitely hyped up on something, and we really, it's dangerous that he's sending a message that if you're, you know, a real American, you can go without masks, and if you catch it, you know, you'll be able to beat it. Most Americans don't have the luxury of going into Walter Reed Hospital and getting experimental medications, and that's the first thing that the president should be talking about.
No, absolutely. And, you know, because I had said, you know, right when he went into the hospital, not all of us are going to get a six-room suite. Not all of us are going to have round-the-care doctors, you know, at our beck and call, and everything we could possibly want. A helicopter at the ready. You know, we don't get that kind of access. In fact, you know, some of the people that I've known that have unfortunately had this had a very difficult time getting tested, had a very difficult time getting treatment, and it was a long, long haul for them because they didn't get the early treatment. I want to know the timeline when he was first diagnosed. I want to know what the reaction was the moment, because he's been tested numerous times. I think that's important for the rest of us to know how this played out for him.
Yeah, as doctors are now saying, he may not be infectious now. If that's the case, you really have to look back 14, 15 days. So it's quite, there's a good reason why they're not disclosing his last negative test, because it's, whenever it comes out, we're going to find out that he was campaigning and holding events in various parts of the country, unfortunately, probably with a high likelihood that he was infected at the time.
Now, perhaps even during the presidential debate, which is just one of those things where you go, wow, how irresponsible, how irresponsible can you be?
Yeah, he was, he seemed to be kind of hyperventilating during that. We wish him well. However, we all have to act responsibly, and if we had a better example from the top, the country would be in a better place now. We're starting to experience a fall spike again, really the third spike that we've seen, and we're also entering flu season, and we still don't have the vaccine, so it might well be a very tough fall if we let down our guard with regard to mass and public and social distancing.
No, we just saw today, Florida, another 3,300 cases, another 164 dead, and they've really scaled back their testing. And this is one of the things that's concerning to me, because you do talk about, you know, how do we hold these elected officials responsible? And look, I'm as critical of de Blasio and Cuomo as anybody, but I'm more critical of someone like DeSantis who and someone like Trump, who said, you know, hey, if we just stop testing, we won't have people who get the virus, which is just insane. But you've got, you know, governors like DeSantis and Abbott who are doing everything they can do to make it appear that they're somehow, monkeying with the numbers.
Well, yeah, they're acting through their political instincts rather than their public service and public health interest. And unfortunately, really, the message is they're willing for political gain. They're willing to sustain increased levels of infection and deaths in their state. But it's really a false narrative. We don't want to kill the economy. But if we open up a little bit, get a spike in infections and deaths, and then have to close down again, it only makes it harder if we have this start and stop approach to public health and the economy. So, we're not going to be out of the woods on the economy until we get a handle on the public health problem.
For a very long time. I mean, this has got to be contained before our economy is going to turn around. And look, there are millions of people in our country suffering. We've got a president who walked away from the stimulus. There's all the politics now around that. And yet we see that the wealth class in this country has seen their wealth nothing but expand, and the divide between the haves and the have-nots get even bigger than it's ever been in the history of our country. And for me, what this pandemic has shown is how desperate the working class of this country is, and how, well, mass desperation doesn't affect our wildly wealthy.
Yeah, one of the chapters in my book, I mean, much of it deals with the economics and the wealth gap. One chapter is... not surprisingly, the rich are getting richer, and sure enough, the poor are getting poorer. But it's not just the poor, it's the middle and working class is getting really slammed. Small businesses, working people, the unemployment insurance has expired for a lot of people. We only got one stimulus check for a lot of people, a lot of small businesses. I see it in my area, and I'm sure other people see it around the country. The mainstays of the community, the shops on Main Street are closed, and we may never see them open up again, certainly in their current form. We need that leadership from Washington. We need another stimulus package to see us through this crisis. We get a no from the Senate and apparently a no from the White House.
Scary and dangerous times. Again, the book, COVID-19, The Virus That Changed America and the World, written by Kenneth McCallion. We'll make sure we get out links on how you can take a look at that and pick up a copy. An important book. Kenneth, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Again, as I said, the book COVID-19, The Virus That Changed America and the World. Make sure you take a look at it. We'll get links out on how you can do that. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this